This is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel. Race and Jews, Part 3. This time I'd like to contrast what we talked about the last time, William Graham Sumner's view of ethnocentrism, with the views of Kevin MacDonald and his idea of what he calls hyper-ethnocentrism. And MacDonald focuses specifically on the Jews, whereas what I was able to determine about Sumner was, though he discussed the concept of ethnocentrism in a general way, he did not identify the Jews in any particular way as being the most ethnocentric group. Toward the end, I got cut off a little bit, and I'd like to revisit that last bit that I was quoting from him, the one part of his book, Folkways, where I thought he was actually putting his finger on the Jews, identifying somewhat of a problem with the Jews. He wrote, "There are in India and in the Russian Empire great numbers of remnants of original or of aboriginal tribes, and there are all over the world groups of pariahs or races, maudits, cursed races, which the great groups will not assimilate. The Jews, although more numerous and economically far stronger, are in the same attitude to the peoples amongst which they live." Now, that last sentence there about the Jews is somewhat ambiguous, and I had to read it several times, and I'm still not sure that my interpretation of it is correct. But the way I read it is, he's saying that the Jews are in the same attitude in that they see others as pariahs, as cursed races, to the people amongst which they live, meaning the whites, the Europeans, from our point of view, who we're interested in here. They see Europeans as the cursed race relative to themselves. That's their ethnocentric view. Now, Sumner was writing this in 1907, and in that day and age, it was still reasonable to imagine that the white man ruled in America and in Europe. As Francis Parker Yockey put it, that he saw the white man as ruling 18/20 of the world at that point in history. But 100 years later now, slightly more than 100 years later, there's a big difference. It's still common. In fact, it's even more common to ignore the Jews, to deny that the Jews even have power. But it's far more difficult to actually argue it if you're forced to argue it, to argue that they don't have power. Because it's clear that the Jews do dominate in the realms of finance and media and politics. And that anyone calling any sort of critical attention to it, negative attention, is punished for doing so. Now, Kevin MacDonald, as I said, speaks specifically to the issue of Jews and to their ethnocentrism, which he calls hyper-ethnocentrism, and he has identified the Jews as a hostile elite, where Sumner defined ethnocentrism as the technical name for the view of things in which one's own group is the center of everything and all others are scaled and rated with reference to it. MacDonald speaks specifically of how the Jews and their particular morality come at things. Good is what is good for the Jews, is how they put it. They worry about, is it good for the Jews? They weigh everything in terms of that metric. Now, MacDonald wrote a monograph, published it about 10 years ago, after his original trilogy on the Jews, sort of summing up some of the results, some of the theses of his trilogy, and specifically addressing this issue of ethnocentrism, or how he terms it, hyper-ethnocentrism. The title of it is Understanding Jewish Influence, and the one I'm interested in here and will quote from is the first in a series of three that is subtitled Background Traits for Jewish Activism. The abstract is most excellent, and I'd like to read several paragraphs. It's a very, very long section here. Beginning in the ancient world, Jewish populations have repeatedly attained a position of power and influence within Western societies. I will discuss Jewish background traits conducive to influence, ethnocentrism, intelligence and wealth, psychological intensity, aggressiveness, with most of the focus on ethnocentrism. I discuss Jewish ethnocentrism in its historical, anthropological, and evolutionary context, and in its relation to three critical psychological processes: moral particularism, self-deception, and the powerful Jewish tendency to coalesce into exclusionary authoritarian groups under conditions of perceived threat. Jewish populations have always had enormous effects on the societies in which they reside because of several qualities that are central to Judaism as a group evolutionary strategy. First and foremost, Jews are ethnocentric and able to cooperate in highly organized, cohesive, and effective groups. Also important is high intelligence, including the usefulness of intelligence in attaining wealth, prominence in the media, and eminence in the academic world and the legal profession. I will also discuss two other qualities that have received less attention: psychological intensity and aggressiveness. The four background traits of ethnocentrism, intelligence, psychological intensity, and aggressiveness result in Jews being able to produce formidable, effective groups, groups able to have powerful transformative effects on the peoples they live among. In the modern world, these traits influence the academic world and the world of mainstream and elite media, thus amplifying Jewish effectiveness compared with traditional societies. However, Jews have repeatedly become an elite and powerful group in societies in which they reside in sufficient numbers. It is remarkable that Jews, usually as a tiny minority, have been central to a long list of historical events. Jews were much on the mind of the church fathers in the 4th century during the formative years of Christian dominance in the West. Indeed, I have proposed that the powerful anti-Jewish attitudes and legislation of the 4th century church must be understood as a defensive reaction against Jewish economic power and enslavement of non-Jews. Jews who had nominally converted to Christianity but maintained their ethnic ties in marriage and commerce were the focus of the 250-year Inquisition in Spain, Portugal, and the Spanish colonies in the New World. Fundamentally, the Inquisition should be seen as a defensive reaction to the economic and political domination of these, quote, new Christians, unquote. Jews have also been central to all the important events of the 20th century. Jews were a necessary component of the Bolshevik Revolution that created the Soviet Union, and they remained an elite group in the Soviet Union until at least the post-World War II era. They were an important focus of National Socialism in Germany, and they have been prime movers in the post-1965 cultural and ethnic revolution in the United States, including the encouragement of massive non-white immigration to countries of European origins. In the contemporary world, organized American Jewish lobbying groups and deeply committed Jews in the Bush administration and the media are behind the pro-Israel U.S. foreign policy that is leading to war against virtually the entire Arab world. How can such a tiny minority have such huge effects on the history of the West? This article is the first of a three-part series on Jewish influence, which seeks to answer that question. So we see here that the very stark difference between McDonald's attitude about ethnocentrism and Jews specifically, contrasted with William Graham Sumner's, which was much more general. And more or less oblivious to the chance that Jews might ever even become a hostile elite. MacDonald, in retrospect, sees the history, the long history of the Jews in the West, that this development in the 20th century didn't come from nowhere, that there were roots to it, and that when you go searching back through history, it's fairly evident how the Jews got where they are today. Now, the main body of MacDonald's monograph is titled, it's the first of four sections, it's titled Jews Are Hypoethnocentric. And in this section, he really defines what it is that he means by the term hyper-ethnocentric. Near the beginning, he writes, whereas Western societies tend toward individualism, the basic Jewish cultural form is collectivism, in which there is a strong sense of group identity and group boundaries. This is racial consciousness, really group consciousness, and it's based on heritage, on biological connections between the Jews. A little later he writes, Jews are at the extreme of this Middle Eastern tendency toward hyper-collectivism and hyper-ethnocentrism. I give many examples of Jewish hyper-ethnocentrism in my trilogy on Judaism and have suggested in several places that Jewish hyper-ethnocentrism is biologically based. I think it's important here to emphasize that this is relative to Europeans that he's describing this, that this hyper-collectivism, hyper-ethnocentrism is first and foremost relative to Europeans, but in this last paragraph I just read, it's actually even relative to other Middle Easterners who are relatively collective and ethnocentric compared to Europeans, that the Jews, even compared to them, are more collectivist and more ethnocentric. Now, I'm not going to read this entire section, but MacDonald hits many of his main themes, the themes that I've pulled from MacDonald in my reading of his work over the years, specifically the comparison between Europeans and Jews, the moral universalism of Europeans versus the moral particularism of Jews. He speaks also of what he calls self-deception, and I've taken issue with that in the past. I understand what he's trying to get at. The idea is that in order to be the most convincing liar to others, you have to be able to lie to yourself. You have to be able to convince yourself of the lie and believe it yourself before you can, or to better convince other people, is how self-deception is usually described. But I really see it as something that Jews do consciously. They're consciously trying to obfuscate. They, as an example, and MacDonald talks about this as well, they pretend that Jewishness is purely religious, that it has no biological component to it. Usually when they're trying to evade being classed as a race, recognized as a race, they'll fall back into this pretense that it's about religion. And often it comes out in their denial that their Jewishness, that their Jewish identity, that their own self-identification as a Jew has any real meaning or provides any motivation for them to do what they do. And it's especially notable, this deception that they engage in, when they do it in the process of arguing as a Jew in defense of one or more fellow Jews. So they're, and I've seen it actually in arguments about whether Jews are ethnocentric or not, or hyper-ethnocentric or not. I've seen the argument made that Jews aren't hyper-ethnocentric, not by actually confronting or providing any sort of facts to counter the argument, but simply by trying to tear down McDonald, or ironically, to attack his motives, what drives him. And this is the classical argument that Jews make about anti-Semitism. What they call anti-Semitism, any criticism of Jews, is motivated by some sort of moral or mental defectiveness in the anti-Semite. Another theme of McDonald's is, and this is true of Jews, their long historical memory. The fact that they are aware of their history. This is part of their group consciousness, their racial consciousness. They're very well aware of their history, and they dwell on it. It informs them in how they act in the here and now. One of the phrases I picked out here that McDonald uses is the memory of persecution and impending doom. And I would add to that that it's persecution and impending doom at the hands of whites. When you listen to the Jewish narrative, it's not just that they are victims, but that their victimizers are primarily Europeans, whites. Other people would identify this as a victimology, but it's useful to them. It doesn't demoralize them to imagine themselves as victims. It seems to give them a moral basis. It helps them to identify and to feel more of a hang together or hang separately type of motivation. It helps gel their group identity. McDonald also mentions their Judar. He doesn't refer to it as Judar, but he does refer to this uncanny ability that Jews have to identify each other on sight and to identify with each other. They're able to recognize us versus them. He notes their strong identification with Israel and discusses the phenomenon of Zionism. Now, I mentioned us versus them. This is something that sociologists have technical terms for. They call it in-group and out-group. The in-group being us and the out-group being them. And Kevin McDonald at one point refers to an ADL press release, and he quotes Jews extensively to support his arguments. And this one particular example is from 1999 when the ADL was reacting to the announcement of the German government's liberalization of immigration policies. And McDonald describes it. He says that the prospective change in the us versus them attitude alleged to be characteristic of Germany is applauded by the ADL, while the us versus them attitude characteristic of Israel and Jewish culture throughout history is unmentioned. I would be a little bit more harsh in my evaluation and point out that the spectacle of members of the world's most outstanding practitioners of us versus them, the Jews, lecturing and moralizing others, them, lecturing them about the evils of thinking in terms of us versus them. They not only stand there and preach universalism for everybody and then practice it themselves, like, say, white liberals do, but preach universalism for the Gentiles, for the Goyim, and practice quite openly particularism for themselves, exactly the opposite of what they preach. This is commonly referred to as hypocrisy and double standards and such. Now, McDonald concludes his long section, the bulk of his monograph on Jewish hyper-ethnocentrism by writing, "Jewish ethnocentrism is ultimately simple traditional human ethnocentrism, although it is certainly among the more extreme varieties. But what is so fascinating is the cloak of intellectual support for Jewish ethnocentrism. the complexity and intellectual sophistication of the rationalizations for it, some of which are reviewed in Separation and Its Discontents, and the rather awesome hypocrisy or cold-blooded deception of it, given Jewish opposition to ethnocentrism among Europeans. Yeah, I would add that it's really the way I interpret the Jewish narrative is an inversion of reality, that the Jews complaining that they are oppressed by Europeans and telling their one-sided version of history about being oppressed uniformly by Europeans is actually an inversion, that the reality is closer to them being the ones who are exploiting Europeans. And that's how they, that's part of how they do it, is by this narrative that helps motivate their own people by seeing themselves as victims and demoralizes Europeans. When they oppose ethnocentrism among Europeans, that's one of the ways they do it, by telling these tales of woe. Now, section two of the monograph, MacDonald titles, Jews are intelligent and wealthy. I'll just quote one paragraph here. Intelligence is also evident in Jewish activism. Jewish activism is like a full court press in basketball, intense pressure from every possible angle. But in addition to the intensity, Jewish efforts are very well organized, well funded, and backed up by sophisticated scholarly intellectual defenses. A good example is the long and ultimately successful attempt to alter U.S. immigration policy. Section three, he titles, Jews are psychologically intense. And he explains that that means they have higher than average emotional intensity. In the case of Jews, this affects the tone and intensity of their efforts at activism. Among Jews, there is a critical mass that is intensely committed to Jewish causes, a sort of 24/7, quote, pull out all the stops, unquote, commitment that produces instant massive responses on Jewish issues. That immediately calls to my mind the incident several years ago where Sarah Palin accused the Jews media of blood libel. She actually used the term blood libel against her. And the Jewish media went berserk in response to that. Immediately, journalists who most people would never suspect are Jews because they never write about Jewish issues got on a soapbox and proclaimed how offended they were that Sarah Palin tried to use the term blood libel, which they treated as if and described as if it was some sort of proprietary term that only Jews are allowed to use. And in fact, if you examine what this blood libel term means to Jews, that's exactly how they use it. They use it as a weapon against Europeans. It's part of their Jewish narrative that they've been oppressed by Europeans. And to see it used in any other way makes that weapon of theirs less effective. And so they reacted very strongly against that. Another incident that comes to mind that's one of these instant massive responses on Jewish issues is Tom Perkins, the millionaire who complained that the 1% were threatened with a Kristallnacht and was immediately castigated by a bunch of Jews in the media, offended by the idea that he would compare the merely rich, the 1%, to the Jews. And the most recent example that I can think of is when the U.S., when the Israeli military was bombing Gaza just a few months ago, and they were hitting schools and hospitals with their bombs, killing unarmed Palestinians. And in response to this, even quote unquote liberal Jews, comedians, entertainers, people who are supposed to make others laugh for a living, got up on their soapboxes and became very, very sober in their attempt to defend what Israel was doing, and Jews in general. And they did it by surreally describing themselves as the real victims who were only defending themselves by bombing the Palestinians. It calls to mind that old Polish proverb that the Jew cries out in pain as he strikes you. MacDonald's final section is titled, Jews are aggressive, he writes. These characteristics have at times been noted by Jews themselves. In a survey commissioned by the American Jewish Committee study of the Jews of Baltimore in 1962, quote, two-thirds of the respondents admitted to believing that other Jews are pushy, hostile, vulgar, materialistic, and the cause of antisemitism, and those were only the ones who were willing to admit it, unquote. So what to make of all of this? MacDonald's description of Jewish hyper-ethnocentrism. Well, I remember when I first encountered Kevin MacDonald, and over the years, the subsequent opinions of his that I've read, and I've always been impressed with the pure factual terms that he uses, the way he has such a way of describing it that I feel inarticulate in comparison. And yet, over the years, I've also come to understand that however we white people, try to understand what's going on in Jewish heads, that the racial difference between us comes into play, that what the Jews call Goyishkopf, that our Goyish brains, that they themselves have a term that recognizes this difference in mentality between us, that we have a lot of difficulty understanding how they think, that we can't really fully conceive what they're thinking. It's in a way beyond our ability, that we tend to put it in terms that we do understand, that in a way we're projecting our own way of thinking onto Jews and trying to describe it in those terms. And that's what comes to mind when I read MacDonald describing it as self-deception, for example, or even as ethnocentrism or hyper-ethnocentrism. It's really what he's describing and what others have described is really about the Jews. It's really just various facets of an inborn racial ruthlessness that Jews have. This stereotypical willingness that Jews have to say almost anything in defense of Jews, to excuse the harm that Jews are doing to others, to invert reality and flip it around and blame the victim, as outrageous as it is, as we saw with the bombing of Gaza, for instance. Their willingness to lie, to use leaps of logic, to violate the rules of logic, to use logical fallacies, to, when all of that fails, to start hurling insults and other distractions. Ethnocentrism doesn't cut it to describe that. Even hyper-ethnocentrism is only slightly better. Alex Linder's term Loxism, or I prefer Jewism, though these terms are uncommon and relatively unknown, they're better words because they capture the unique, incomparable nature of Jewish ruthlessness. Linder recently wrote something I thought was very insightful. He wrote, whites assume Jews aren't conspiring because whites don't. Jews assume whites are conspiring because they do. Hashtag Loxism.